Kendall. Kendall, do you want to say hi?
Yeah, hey y'all. So this is Kendall Antonelli reporting from my green bedroom in Austin, Texas. I co-own and operate Antonelli's Cheese Shop here in Austin alongside my husband. In February, we just celebrated our 10th anniversary, which we should have celebrated. It was a great milestone, but then we were like, oh great, we can retire now as a joke. And then COVID hit and we're like, no, we take it back. We didn't even we're going to jinx it. So we are a small cut-to-order cheese shop. It's about 700 square feet, but only 200 square feet walkable by customers. Across the street from that, we have a cheese house where pre-COVID, we're hosting 200 to 300 cheese tasting events per year. We also have a third location, which is our warehouse, because we serve wholesale to about 150 to 200 restaurants and chefs in Central Texas. And we run our e-commerce out of there, shipping nationwide, a monthly cheese club, and gifts and such. So excited to be here and, yeah, talk about all of the changes that we have made, and drink coffee every time somebody says the word pivot.
All right. Thanks so much, Kendall. Madison, do you want to go next?
Yes. Hello. I am Madison. I'm calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts, where it is also not 70 degrees. I'm the editor in chief at Culture. I've had the pleasure of sampling one of the boxes from Antonelli's that they're offering right now in their pivot. There you go, everybody drink coffee. Their amazing pivot they've done to online to their YouTube channel with their follow along. So you can actually order, they've done this thing where you can order their boxes and then taste along with them. So you get like a little virtual cheese guided cheese tasting. We're just at Culture, we're just doing the best we can to keep covering all of the COVID efforts and keep promoting y'all in any way that we can and keep making beautiful content.
All right. And then finally, Vero, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, I'm Vero Carrion. I am broadcasting from San Francisco, California, just across the bay from Will. I began my blog, Cheesemonger, like over 10 years ago now. It's like a dinosaur in the blogging world, especially with cheese. And the tagline for that was beautiful cheese in a beautiful setting. I find that is still important these days with COVID. But now I'm managing Miss Cheesemonger. It's kind of like fallen a little to the wayside as my main focus today is Cheese Plus's social media. Cheese Plus is a cheese shop and specialty food store in San Francisco that's been around for almost 15 years now. We celebrate 15 years in June. And our owner Ray is just promoting American and local cheeses and products just as much as possible. That's his big thing is supporting small business. So that's exactly what we're doing. And that's what I'm doing on the social media there.
Well, thanks to everyone. If you don't know me, I'm Will Furtman. I'm CEO of The Monger. We're a platform for information exchange for the specialty food world. We're going to be having a direct-to-consumer platform launching very soon, Your Maker Direct. If you want to learn more about that, Liz will post some contact information for us in the chat box. So I want to ask about the change. Everybody, I'm not gonna use the P word, so you can leave your coffee there. But the first thing I want to do is go around and see from our panelists, what's changed on social media in the last 8 weeks? Like what's been the shift, if any, that you guys have seen?
For me, go ahead. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Madison.
Madison, why don't you start?
Okay, I'll start since I started talking over someone. Sorry. We're seeing so much, like, everybody's seeing the DIY recipes, the at-home cooking, the at-home, like, cheese plates, the at-home, all of the stuff. there's just every single media outlet and every single media outlet has had to turn from their beautiful studios to their home kitchens. So I think we're seeing a lot more. Obviously, we're seeing the Zoom calls, the Zoom conferences. We're seeing the, me broadcasting from my kitchen, that kind of thing. So everybody's really, we're seeing a super saturation of digital content.
And I mean, you say it's super saturated. What do you see as being, as catching people's eye? What do you see for you? What platforms do you see and what activities do you see kind of having the catbird seat of culture that are attracting attention, attracting eyeballs?
Yeah. Well, as I am currently checking on my loaf of sourdough that's in the oven, I guess the more genuine content, the better. Like, the stuff that's performing really well for us right now and the stuff that personally I'm most excited to engage with is the stuff that is like coming to you live from my tiny ass kitchen. Like, this is how we're making, like, the sort of behind the scenes of this is how we're making, you know, your cheese orders happen from the maker or from the cheese shop. So I think the stuff that's the more like stripped down and honest stuff is the stuff that's the most exciting to engage with right now. I think in terms of platforms, the Instagram lives seem to be really effective and successful. But also for a more like, if you're someone who, you want to track, you know, who's watching it and sort of have like a more of a record of who's attending and who's engaging. I think I've seen Zoom conference calls and events, quote unquote, be really effective as well. So I think Zoom and Instagram.
Yeah, Kendall, do you want to let us know, like, yeah, what's been happening online and what's the, you know, what platforms are working for you, what content's working for you right now?
Great. And I talk fast. Sorry. So, first back to your question, like, what have we seen the change be? We've always been online. I don't pay anybody for marketing. It's just myself. I am the marketing department. That being said, anecdotally, so that we have other professionals on here that do this for a living, anecdotally, we've seen a lot of customer engagement go up. People are bored and sitting, many people, if they have the luxury of not being an essential worker, are bored and sitting at home and they want content and they're hungry for it. So if you create it, they will come. So we're getting a lot more likes and engagement in that way. Just as a backstory, some of the quick changes we made, which had been in our business plan for years, but we had never launched because we sort of were like, oh, it's not good enough yet, or oh, we'll get to it, or it has to be perfect. We threw all that out the door and it was like, there's no time like now. And basically within 10 hours the first day, and then we say in 10 days we made more changes than we have in 10 years. But we launched a YouTube channel. We updated our website and immediately put a tab there. And I would suggest that to everybody out there if they have the resources. That right now, one of the hardest things I'm finding is if I want to support an organization, I just can't even figure out if they're open or how to get to them. So we have a tab that just says operating during COVID-19. Here are the ways you can support our business. And it literally lists item 1 through 20, what you can do, whether you are local or whether you are out of Austin. So we are staying, it's exhausting, but I'm staying glued to social media. I am responding to inquiries left and right. Like, do you ship? Will you do this? How do I join a cheese class? So the opportunity is there and people want something. And we had to quickly pivot. Yay, drink coffee. All of our events, so the way our business works, when South by Southwest was canceled, we lost, and then sheltering in the place when it happened, we lost 95% of our wholesale business overnight, which is half of our revenue. And so that is still non-existent to this day. The good news is that our retail and our events are up. And so they're kind of carrying us so that we're breaking even across the board and haven't had to lay off anybody. And that we still have work and we think we're actually netting positive. The events, though, we quickly had to transition and go to virtual. So we used GoToMeeting because it was just, it's like Zoom. Zoom is probably better, but it's just a capacity we already had set up. And then we did it because we had to, but the amazing part of it, to wrap up this point, sorry, the amazing part of it is that people need things to do, and they are lonely and bored or need to lock the door and not be with the rest of their family. More importantly, they need to celebrate anniversaries and milestone birthdays and engagements. And so people started booking our tastings as private events. So for instance, tonight, our team is hosting 4 different cheese tastings at the exact same time for different private events. We're hosting 4 different ones tomorrow. Networks like the Human Rights Campaign locally and the Austin Child Guidance Center, nonprofits and networking associations, the Westlake Chamber of Commerce, they're all hosting us because people need content and something to do. And so that's one of the major ways that we've moved is it's both beneficial to us in keeping us alive, but it's whenever you can make something a win-win in social media and however, but we're giving them something too, and we realize that we're fulfilling a big need out there.
So I want to keep you on this point for a second. You know, you're talking about running events, and how do you do fulfillment? Like how do you handle the sale and distribution of product so right. that everyone has the same cheese in front of them?
So we have 4 different types of events. We're always working on our messaging. The main ones though are, we sell tickets online. People come pick up their cheese plate the day of in a window from 12 to 4. We do contactless curbside delivery into your trunk. And then there's instructions, they go home and then they tune into a link, or we do some Facebook Live at a certain time. So all of those are really Austin oriented. But to your point, we started getting begged, please, I'm out in the rural area, I have nothing, or I'm strapped here, what do we do? Or we are a family across the United States and need to celebrate that our aunt just finished her last chemo treatment. So we did what Madison was speaking to, we created Cheese 101 in a box, and we put all of it in a box, and then we created 2 videos, a 10-minuter on how to unpack it, and then an hour-long video of John and I sitting in our house. And again, we had to get over it. It's not branded. There's like cheese, like kid clothes and dogs running around, but it lends that air of authenticity. But so now people, if they're outside of Austin, they can also do that tasting. And then we're going to be rolling out different tastings for those shipped versions as well.
Wow. Okay.
So we've done 2,500 people with a physical plate in front of them in Austin. And that's not including all of the other people who've tuned in or who we've shipped to.
Holy Moses. That's a lot. That's a lot. I can understand that you're glued. To just stay with retail for a second, Vero, you know, what's going on? You know, what's changed? What's going on with Cheese Plus, and what's working for you?
Similar to Kendall, we saw a huge increase in engagement on social media, but not just social media, newsletter too. The newsletter has kind of exploded and become a really important means of communication, as well as the phone. So we give our phone number out all the time, so people can call during all of our waking hours or all of our open hours. Instagram has exploded. We've gotten like 450 new followers in the past 2 months, whereas the past month before that we'd gotten maybe 50. And those followers have been very, very interested in Cheese Plus's well-being. They're really happy to share the sandwich that they got from Cheese Plus, or whatever. The wine sales have exploded as well, and so they're really happy to share that. They're quarantine happy hours. We have seen a lot of questions coming in from customers about shipping hours, you know, whether we have yeast or, you know, sugar or things like that, because the baking, of course, has gone up. So in the shop, Ray has modified, you know, operations. So like, we make sure there's social distancing within the shop. There's a hand washing station outside. Everyone has to wear a mask inside. There's plexiglass all over at every station, you know, at the register and the cheese counter and the meat counter, and the pickup counter outside. Sadly, no more dogs are allowed, but that doesn't stop anybody.
this being San Francisco.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the shop is still seeing 300 to 400 customers come in every day. And, you know, maybe there are fewer people making purchases, but those purchases are way, way bigger than before because people are stocking up. And so the shop is doing quite well. And even things that might be considered small luxuries, like flowers or chocolates, are doing really well because people need a little bit of joy in their lives. Social media wise, though, content, there has been a shift in how we create the content. I rely a little bit more on Ray to give me things because I don't go into the shop as often. I've been plating boards and shooting them at home with a little extra care because, again, can't go into the shop. Content that's been doing well, people seem to be reacting really well to team members in action. So people working at the shop, just going about their business. People, I think, are really responding to the idea that a small business is really about supporting many individuals and their stories. So people love seeing them. They like to know the names of our team members and what they do and why they like Cheese Plus and their favorite foods, etc. So that's been doing really well. And again, those little celebratory moments, birthdays, Mother's Day coming up. People are looking for little ways to like spice up those holidays or those days. So content that highlights that. We've got like chocolates that have a little note about how great mom is, and they're doing, you know, that sort of content. People are looking for that.
I need to put water in. Just
yeah. Okay, we can work out the delivery methods. Yeah, and so we've got delivery as well within San Francisco and potentially a little bit beyond, you know, East Bay and South Bay, and curbside pickup that we've had to beef that up, and online ordering through Chow Now, we've got that going on as well. And then another really great thing that's gotten a lot of traction for Cheese Plus is a community-based initiative called the 6 Foot Social Club. Ray thought of this as a way to give back to small businesses in the neighborhood that have had to close or greatly cut their workers' hours or just furlough them entirely. That is by far been the most popular type of content. Ray is extremely community oriented, and so this is about neighbors helping neighbors. And so we've been posting people love wearing the shirts and like giving it to someone else, and then they'll stay 6 feet apart and they'll take a picture, like that sort of thing. And so all those proceeds go to these businesses. So highlighting the businesses. Yeah. Yeah. We're almost at the $10,000 mark, and it's been just under 4 weeks. So it's been really fabulous.
Well, thank you, Vero. I want to get to Rin and, you know, from a producer standpoint, you know, what's been the change that you've seen, and what content's really been working well for you? I know, because you had a big feature recently.
We did. We were, and it actually, so we were featured on Good Morning America last Tuesday. That actually was a result of a social media post. Much like everyone else is saying, we're seeing far greater engagement. You know, it had, prior to COVID, I would say, our Instagram channel was outpacing the growth of our Facebook channel. And interestingly, that has shifted. So I don't know if that means our demographic has shifted or what, but we are literally picking up 100 followers a day on Facebook. And our content is pretty similar across both channels. So I can't really say that there's, you know, one thing going one way or the other. I did a post kind of going back to that notion of authenticity. We were trying to give some anecdotal evidence to what was happening with all of these stimulus packages. So the EIDL, the PPP, some programs that were happening in our state. And I just kind of was at my wit's end. I was hearing about trillions of dollars out there for people. And yet, you know, I had been very, very fast to get all of those in, and still seeing no hope. And we have dairy farmers that we have commitments to, and we were trying not to lay off any of our employees. And I just kind of posted a video just venting my frustration and saying, who can help me? Who can help me get in front of the right people, the governor, senators, what have you? And the response from that was really remarkable.
and someone said, hey, you know, here's the connection to GMA. And the host from Good Morning America reached out to us immediately. And within 24 hours, we were set to go live. And we sold 13,000 mozzarella, virtual mozzarella classes in about 16 hours, which obviously completely shifted our business and turned us into a fulfillment center, shipping nationwide. Interestingly, that then resulted in like an 800% growth on our own personal website. And as people across the country now know us, we are shipping, you know, more mozzarella curd out there. It's interesting. We have spent 8 years desperately trying to explain our mission to people of cultured mozzarella and fermented mozzarella and our belief system, and really just trying to revolutionize away from vinegar and citric acid. And it really has taken very little hold in the industry, except for a lot of just really passionate chefs out there. But it's amazing that this has given us an opportunity to promote that platform in a way that we just never had before. And the response on social media that we're getting from people, you know, we're cultured now, we're going to be reading ingredient labels, you know, we believe in fermented mozzarella, we believe in, you know, whey-based ricotta, has just been inspiring. And all of that is coming back through these social channels that then we're passing on to our team and our dairy farmers, that's inspiring them in a way that we weren't, that surprised us in a time that's kind of sad.
So I want to stop you there, because I want to, you know, your curds program is something that I think maybe people would want to hear, like how that relates to, you know, that's a product that you sell, but just tell us a little bit more about it, because it's different.
Sure. So, my husband and I trained for years in Italy to make mozzarella through natural fermentation. And so when we started this business 8 years ago, because mozzarella is a cheese that in our mind is supposed to be eaten the day it's made, never refrigerated, that type of thing. But fermented curds really have a pretty short shelf life. We married our knowledge of Italian cheese making with the American supply chain and froze the curds so that people could get the curds and then stretch them themselves and taste mozzarella the way it's supposed to be, naturally fermented and the day it's made. And so we designed this virtual class as a pivot, drink your coffee or espresso, as a pivot to, much like Kendall mentioned, you know, 95% of our revenue disappeared overnight when the restaurants shut down. And the other major facet of our business is leading tours to Italy. We had 8 tours on the calendar for this year, all sold out, and so far 6 have been postponed. So, you know, I think that this was something we said, well, you know, if we can do these virtual classes, which originally were live, and then when the, excuse me, Good Morning America came along, we said, you know, obviously we're not going to be able to teach 13,000 people live. Logistically, that's a little bit of a nightmare. So we set up a password protected part of our site. And so essentially what happens is we ship the curds, so we could take advantage of one rate shipping. We ship them so that they get to the customer thawed, and then they, have the password in their little kit with the salt that they need, and they go and they watch and they follow along with me, and they have perfect balls of mozzarella when they're done. Again, going back to social media, the waterfall stretch, the perfect ball of mozzarella, the plating, and the fact that mozzarella is a cheese that people are so like, oh, it's the number one cheese we consume as Americans. Like, they want to story it. They want to post pictures about it. They're so excited that they've done it. And then that they have this knowledge now about the difference between cultured mozzarella and vinegar and citric acid, they feel like they have a secret to share. And so it's just been explosive from a social media perspective for us. They post, you know, in their stories on Instagram or Facebook, and then immediately we can tell when people have taken the classes, all of a sudden we get a huge bump in our social media following. And so, and then they hop on and they buy more curds.
And, so, I want to stop you there for a second, because I think that what I'm hearing from all from this whole panel is there's the experiential element is 100%. Really what it's about. Mm-hmm. And really everyone giving idle hands, you know, the devil's work to do. Mm-hmm. And it seems like all of you are maybe approaching it maybe in a slightly different way. You know, Madison, I'd love to hear your sort of like 3,000 foot view on this. But it sounds like, you know, to sell cheese, you need to sell cheese making. To sell cheese, you need to connect it with, you know, charitable work. To sell cheese, you know, there's all these different elements, but it's all about connecting people either to like craft or to one another.
Yeah.
I don't know, Madison, do you want to comment on that? Or
sure. I mean, I think, you know, one thing that's obviously we're not able to do right now is at a cheese shop, or with a cheese maker, we can't have the person-to-person interaction. So much of the storytelling that happens around cheese is impossible right now, right? So I know it may feel uncomfortable to go live on Instagram or to see yourself, like to record yourself in your closet or in your kitchen or in your green room, like wherever. Like this may feel uncomfortable, but making yourself vulnerable in that way is allowing you to continue to tell the story of both the cheese, whether it's your cheese that you're making or a cheese from any number of makers that you love, you know. It's really like that's how we're going to continue to storytell in this time. So I guess just everyone's efforts, it's been so amazing to watch and to support and to share all of the different projects and pivots and things that that the cheese shops and the makers have undertaken. And then I guess, you know, we were having this conversation, or I've had this conversation, I feel like, with so many people lately, but I think there are a lot of makers and shops that are incorporating some sort of charitable element to what they're doing, right? There's like Lively Run, who's now taking all of the excess milk and making cheese with it. There are countless makers and shops that are donating portions of sales to, you know, different food banks and stuff like that. But I think that's important, and I think that work is something to be applauded. And I think it's one of the situations where we have to look at, you know, are you pulling down your own, putting on your own oxygen mask first before you put on others? So I guess I would say that there doesn't have to be that charitable element to what you're doing, because you need to survive too. So I think, like, if, I don't know, I and that's kind of a rambling thought, but I guess, like, I don't necessarily think everyone has to be doing a charitable or incorporating that into what they're doing right now. I think that all of the programs are equally viable. And I think you're right. Like I think Kendall was saying earlier, what you put out into the universe doesn't have to be perfect. None of us are doing perfect stuff right now. Everybody's at their the end of their bandwidth, right? But just putting something out and being present and showing up and making yourself vulnerable, like,
That's what I'm hearing, is the vulnerability, being vulnerable and imperfect seems to be a theme of the day. I mean, Rin, that's how you ended up on Good Morning America, was to bear
so cool.
to bear your soul. Can people share maybe something that they felt very exposed about? Like one concrete example about something, and you know, I'll start with myself, which is, you know, broadcasting from my bedroom with my children, not, you know, 10 feet away, and the door doesn't really lock, so they could be bursting in at any moment, and then it would be the Will and Leo and Oscar show,
right.
You know. Yeah, and the bedroom here. These are my drawers. Can you guys share something that you did that you felt like wasn't perfect, but was very successful?
I don't know if this, this has just always been a part of our story, but I'm a survivor of depression and was hospitalized when I was in college after a really scary incident. And so that's always kind of been, it wasn't intentionally a platform, but I've always shared that story, but in the last 2 or 3 years, I've been asked to share it more on a larger stage and a larger audience, like at the women's marches at the Capitol. And so that's been part of my story. And then when in 2018, when we opened our downtown shop/kitchen, which was a big failure, we learned stuff, yada yada, it's not a failure. Yeah, at the time, you don't say that. At the time, it was a failure. The first part of it was layoffs. John went through some PTSD because of that. So anyway, for us, we're really both open about that. And almost every Facebook Live we do every Wednesday, we are talking about it. We're saying that social distancing is not the right adjective. It's physical distancing, that we need to be more socially connected now more than ever. Almost on every one of them, I'm crying in some part of it. And it's an authentic, just like, thank you for being here. You're giving us a purpose to keep going. You're making us not feel alone because there's 150 of you watching right now. We can't believe it. And then they're telling us like, wow, this was the most normalcy I've had in weeks. Or I just feel like I was sitting next to you on your couch. And thanks for, so in that way, back to the being authentic and keeping it real. But that's always been a part of our story that we've owned. And I think that that's really resonating with people at these times, especially when one moment we're on cloud nine and the next moment we're like, how are we going to make it?
This is Ren. I'll share our most vulnerable, I would say, was when the word I keep using is shame was exposed, that we had to have our dairy farmers dump for loads of milk, which was 4,000 gallons, which in the grand scheme of things is very small, but being such an advocate for the dairy industry, to have to be a part of the problem and not the solution. It was, and Kendall, that was amazing that you shared that. And I think there's a lot of us, particularly as small business owners, who often feel isolated, right? Like that we're the only ones going through this, and the depression, the shame that came from having to do that, actually putting it out there and sharing it socially, and allowed me to rectify it, allowed me to say, okay, I told everybody I did it. You know, it took some of the, well, I still feel shame, but it allowed me to be honest with our followers that even we had to make, the decision was paying my employees so I didn't have to lay them off, or buying more milk that I didn't have sales for. And so, you know, there were a lot of tears, but it was a decision I had to make, and owning it and putting it out there. And it was interesting. Immediately, our website sales went up because people were like, oh, we can help. We can help do that. And, you know, it was interesting, Madison, what you said about, you know, tying it to a charitable cause. The things that we're trying to do, and we're trying to get something together, you know, to use up excess milk as well and to help with those charitable causes. But there is still, people are not angry for us to try to save our business. And they're okay that that isn't philanthropy. They're like, no, we want to help. You're paying people. You're supporting people. How can we help with that? And by sharing that socially, by putting that out there, I think people were like, oh, let me hop online and buy cheese. And that way Brynn doesn't have to, you know, dump any milk. And so sharing that vulnerability, sharing that shame, as I said, actually was a benefit, not just to me, but to my dairy farmers.
Yeah, I think just to your point, people, our customers want to help. And now you can hear my child screaming. But our customers want to help. They want to know what they can do. And so any way we can say, this is how you can help. And if we're honest with it, and then showing gratitude afterwards. So sharing those posts or just over and over, just running back. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Da, da. Yeah. People, I think, feel helpless right now at home, and they want to know that they're a part of the solution. So every single time that we can share how they can help us and then be grateful for it publicly is helping our social media presence and attracting more customers.
I would say one of the things that I hear too is being very concrete. I think a lot of times when you are doing marketing, you're tempted to paper over a lot of things. And, you know, what I'm hearing from you, Vero, I'd love to hear from you about this too, is just like being direct. We need your help because if X, then Y. And laying it out as simply as that. Because, you know, it's in some sense, everyone's mask has been pulled off their face because of COVID. And that's what social media is supposed to be. It's really the platonic dream of social media is we all get to be friends. And that isn't the way that it's worked, but there is an element of the things that you tell your friends, you know, the things that you share with your friends, you share on social media. I don't know, Vero, do you have any thoughts on that? On vulnerability?
Yeah, a couple thoughts. Well, like I said, so Cheese Plus has about 25 employees. So constantly reminding our customers that we need to keep those 25 employees and their families supported is one thing that we've shared. But I found another difficulty is not just the vulnerability, but having to enforce some rules. people have to wear masks to come into the shop, and they have to keep a certain distance from each other, and they have to we don't have to wear gloves, but you have to sanitize or wash your hands. And people had to wear gloves until very recently. And so there are a lot of riled up customers because they didn't want to wear masks or gloves or follow the protocols that had been put in place. And so that was really difficult. We got a few bad reviews on social media because of it, but we decided to let those stand because we wanted to show customers that we were serious about enforcing these rules and that these rules exist to keep those 25 employees safe and our customers, obviously. So that's been really difficult. Everybody in the shop is really stressed and has broken down at some point in the past couple of months. And said some things that maybe they never thought they'd say in retail to a customer, but those rules are really, really important to enforce. And so we've been trying to hammer that home on social media and in person, and most people are very understanding of them, and they support Cheese Plus.
I think about Alamo Drafthouse, actually, Kendall, and their very strict policies around not talking in the movies and the way that they advertise that as a feature. You know, they say, we don't let you talk. I mean, who knows what terrible things they're going through right now. But sometimes, yeah, showing that part of it is, and that's another way of being vulnerable, because that's exposing yourself to criticism from your customers. That's getting out there and letting people sling some mud, mm-hmm. and standing there with the mud on you and continuing on.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how things start to play out. We, for the last 7 weeks, have not allowed any foot traffic in our shop, and we have decided, because our sales are so good, that there's no reason we should. If we open up right now to 25% traffic and you have to maintain 6 feet, that means we can allow 2, maybe 3 customers in the shop at max, versus if we don't allow anybody in, we're churning out orders, like 200 orders daily. So we can do more with the doors closed. But we got our first yesterday irate person who's upset that we're not doing it. So I think, yeah, and this next phase for us is that the society is becoming really polarized again on how you should operate your business, and that it now this is for some people very political, when for some of us it's still just a health issue. But so how we navigate that in this realm. When we first closed our doors to public, which was before it was mandated, we had the door open so people would know we were open for business, but had a huge A-frame blocking it and said, stop, do not come in. And I mean, you would have to you had to move it to get around in. And we had people still moving it and coming around in. And we had an incident the same Vero where our whole team, I don't blame them. They just were like, wait, protocol broken, and all screamed at the customer. So we're technically wrong, but the customer moved. I mean, anyway, so we're just saying, we have to make sure our team knows that they are okay and they are in the right, and some things are different for us right now, and that we'll keep social meeting on and smoothing those things on our end, but stay true to those guts, So that's I think that's a whole part of this component as well.
It's funny. I just wanted to share real quick. We were talking, you can imagine, selling 13,000 mozzarella kits through Good Morning America, the type of very interesting emails we have gotten. And we were saying this morning that we would love to do a YouTube video on, like they do on The Late Show, of celebrities reading mean tweets and just reading some of the most bizarre, who thinks these things? And you have to remind yourself that these are people who've potentially been quarantined for 8 weeks, 10 weeks, whatever. And, maybe they're just at the end of their rope and psychologically not feeling great. But, some of the comments we've gotten have just been so bizarre. And we're like, how funny would it be to actually read these mean tweets, essentially? Obviously, we wouldn't do it, but it gave us a laugh to keep it in perspective.
So I want to turn it over to the other participants in a second, because I want everybody to get their questions in. But before we go, I want each of you to just name for me literally the three platforms, and whether that's, we mentioned not just social media, but newsletters, your website, the three platforms for you that are working out best. Rin, why don't we start with you? You mentioned Facebook and Instagram.
Yes. So those are our two big social channels. We do very minimal on Twitter, and when we do, we get very little response out of that. We have not transitioned into Snapchat or any of those platforms, TikTok or whatever. But I would say the biggest definer besides Instagram and Facebook for us has been, we converted our website to Shopify, and the apps that we've been able to integrate through that to allow pop-ups, to give a quick explanation or newsletter generation, or to quickly, easily get out newsletters for engagement. So I would say Instagram, Facebook, and Shopify would be the three things I would mention.
Great. Kendall?
Well, I don't follow the rules well because I can't do three. But yes, Facebook, Instagram, we send a weekly newsletter that for the last 11, since we started writing it before we opened, and we've never missed one. And we have 17,000 people who've subscribed to it, and we get about 25% readership every single week. So that's been our main churning for us. But yeah, just if other people have the resources, we switched basically all of our online platforms and selling, and getting them all to speak together has been crazy. But and we launched our YouTube channel finally. And then something that was just a minor for us that we're doing via GoToMeeting or a Zoom, but it's all about, right, the experiential, like you said, either us getting into their homes or still inviting them into our spaces, even though they can't physically come in. So we launched something called Cheesemonger Live, which we've owned the domain for the last 5 or 6 years. But we're doing so people can still shop through the case looking. It's like a FaceTime app, but you look through and you pick and you see which cheese looks the most ripe and what you want. And it's not that we're getting a zillion of those a day, but that has generated a lot of media attention, which is then being broadcast, which still brings customers to us. So it's still being buzzworthy.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Vero?
Instagram is huge for us. Facebook is pretty good as well. Our newsletter, as I said, is really, really powerful. And we get a lot of those email addresses from people who order online through, we use Chow now, but there are a bunch of other platforms out there.
And so, soon to be Your Maker Direct. Your Maker Direct for retailers, for producers. We're launching a B2C multi-sided marketplace. Call us.
Yeah. Yay. Oh, I love that. Yes,
But a question came through. A question came through from Elizabeth Feinberg. She says, "I'd love to know about customer acquisition costs." And that's a really important point. Is how much are you guys spending on promotion through these platforms? You know, her question is Instagram, Facebook, but it, you know, how many customers are you buying?
None. We don't do any promotion. Mm-mm.
I would say we used to do advertising, like some of the traditional, like a Facebook ad here and there and an Instagram ad here and there. Actually, you know, we did one ad right at the beginning, which got a lot of traffic, and it was, in our Instagram post, we don't usually use words, and it was one big one that said, "It's time for small businesses to get scrappy," and you scrolled through and it was like, "Here's the 5 ways you can support us." That one was our one paid one and picked up a lot. But otherwise, we did it before, but right now we aren't needing it. Customers, like my fellow panelists have said, are creating the content, and I'm just trying to share it every day, and that's keeping us relevant.
Yep.
How much? I have a follow-on question. Is how, you know, Vero, you are obviously a staffer for social media, right? Can you guys talk about how in each business you guys are staffing your social media operation, and what other things are you doing? Because I know that it feels like my hair is on fire. So, Rin, do you want to just talk about like in your normal day, how much do you do of social media? Are you 100% on it? Are you 50% on it? What's the story?
I usually take. So I would say I do the bulk of our social media, but I also have two other folks that work with me that if they see something or if there's something they want to do, they'll hop on. We were fortunate in that we just launched a beer cheese, a dry hopped. We hop infused the milk, and we believe to be the first ones to have made that commercially available. And so it's this like super IPA, it drinks like beer, basically, this cheese. And so like craft beer enthusiasts all across the country have just kind of come looking for it. So we were fortunate in that we had some, between the Good Morning America and this new beer cheese, we've had some publicity that has driven that business for us. So, you know, I hesitate to say we've done no investment, because we've just been, it was a good time for us. We had two things that happened. And obviously, you know, we had to give a good deal to Good Morning America. So there is some cost to that. But I would say, me personally, I probably spend a couple hours a day on working on our social media platforms in different ways, either making a video or just reposting. To Kendall's point, I try to allow the customers, because they love, when we put them up on our story, they love to feel like that, oh, I got on Caputo Brothers' story. Like, it makes them feel like a little celebrity.
Isn't it funny to you? It's funny to me that they'll post it on their story, we share it on ours, and then they repost it. And you're like, yes. Okay, yeah,
whatever, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a critical point, though, is resharing your customers' stuff. Which is the power of social media, right? That's the multiplier. Keeping your eyes open for that. Madison, were you going to say something?
No, yeah, I was just going to say that it may seem really silly, but it's that kind of engagement. Like, it's wild to think that you are kind of a celebrity to them, but just, like, especially now, feeling, it's like this, that's the only community, and that's the interaction that we have right now. So I think it's even more important, and it's free publicity for you, right? Just repost what they're tagging you in. And that's something at Culture every Friday. It's something I was very adamant about us doing when I came to Culture a little over a year ago was something super simple, just having Friday favorites where we share our favorite things we were tagged in that week, because it's to be, and even like in my personal life, like on my personal Instagram, when I tag brands and things, like it feels, I don't know why someone, a psychologist, psychiatrist will probably analyze us, years from now, but it feels really good and cool to be reposted by a brand, whether it's a cheese shop that you love or a clothing company, whatever. It's building that social network too, which is all we have right now.
Thank you.
Hey, Will, I want to mention one little thing as a result of that too. Something we did unwittingly, and to mention to what Madison's saying there, our customer service email, the when it goes back to someone, it signs my name, and people think that I am personally responding to the email. And I can't tell you how many responses we get back that are like, "Oh my goodness, Ren, I can't believe you took the time to write me an email." And so of course we, all get a big kick out of that. But it goes to show that people feel like that affirmation or that social connection that Kendall was mentioning of having that connection to you when you're so busy and you're trying to do all these things and they're stuck at home and they feel helpless in some ways from contributing, that you made that connection to them. I think there's some, like you said, Madison, some psychological affirmation that comes mm-hmm. that gives them a warm fuzzy. And if we can be a little bright spot in these people's day, great.
I wanted to make sure that we're getting questions from our audience. Feel free to unmute yourself and speak directly into the microphone if you've got something you'd like to hear. I wanted to also put out this question. Do you guys have any set policies around social media sharing? Because I can imagine, letting different people have your password and post to the feed might generate problems if someone's not as professional as you might want them to be. Have you guys had any problems with that?
No. For Culture, I imagine with any brand, I'm super, super particular about how our Instagram feed in particular or specifically happens. So I highly curate it. I don't know. For such a visual platform, I think personally it feels we did one Instagram takeover a few months ago, or maybe it was when we were in, it was the Winter Fancy Food Show. Tanaya Darlington, who's Madame Fromage on Instagram, she did a takeover. So we do have a set of guidelines, like it's a simple Google Doc that we'll share. But generally speaking, we're pretty strict.
I think for right now, just me doing it. So that's why I've like begged different staff who have great social media eyes, and it's like please take it over. Not right now during COVID, because everybody's working their tushies off. Right now it's just me. When we've had other people help us in the past, yes, we have like a little one pager, but it's like stick to our brand principles, our core principles, and then there's some little tips and tricks, but it's not that big of a deal.
Okay. Different approaches. Anything from the audience?
Well, I saw one question that said, what would we advise for a small business who's struggling with transitioning? It's in the chat, but struggling okay. with transitioning to online sales. Mm. I think it was something yeah. like that. My question would be more specifically, which part are you struggling with? Like the technology and launching, or like right now, our mongers, cheesemongers are social people. And one of them just started posting last night, like, I miss seeing your faces. And the reason I do my job is because I get to interact with all these people on a daily basis. And right now, as Vera said, our team, like, but we don't even have customers coming in, is 100% of production line. I think Rin was saying that. Like, so it's just come in, head down, and for your shift that day, you're just cutting cheese all day long. And it's completely different than it ever used to be. And I wonder how long we'll keep them, because how much joy can they get if they are social beings and this is a very different job at this time? So to me, the question, whoever raised it, about what part is it that you're struggling to transition to, I'm guessing it's more of a technology issue or question, or which platform or what resources are available to you. But yeah, I would break that up into a more specific. But for us, whenever we're trying to tackle a problem, we'll list all of the sticking points and everything in our way, and then say, okay, which one of these, if we do, lines everything up or makes everything else easier? What's actually doable versus not? And sometimes when we make it more task-oriented, we feel like we can get through it better than just, this is too daunting to do.
I'm going to share just a little bit about that. Because we are offering an online platform, we have, for anyone who wants it, and please get in touch with Liz about this, we actually have a costing document for dropship and local delivery sales that we can share with you, so you can at least start to look at that aspect. If you want to break it up, we're talking about platform. So how are you selling now? Fulfillment, are you going to do drop shipping? Are you going to do local delivery? Are you going to just do curbside pickup? I would say you're going to have to look at all your costs and all your packaging costs and redo the whole shebang. And that's a big deal. And you may want to consult, you may want to get a consultant in on that. It might be well worth your time. Although given this environment, that might be difficult. And then marketing, because I think that, Kendall, you're really right that it's a different business. Everyone has to now go into a different business. Everyone drink your coffee. That's the pivot. That's the challenge, is to be in a completely different business than the one you began. Please, we're not experts here at the Monger. We're developing some documents we can send to you. I don't know, Rin, Kendall, would you guys be willing to talk to somebody who has questions?
100%. I mean, in fact, I got probably 4 or 5 people who reached out directly since the last one of these that I did. I now have a form email that takes you down. We use Shopify, Innature, ShipStation, FedEx OneRate. These are the rates I have for the 3 boxes we use. Here's who we get our bricks from. Use foam, not gel. Here's, who I've gotten liners from that fit directly into OneRate boxes. Here's who you call. So if there's anybody interested in that, my email address is simple.